हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। ओके जगदीश जी हैज सम क्वेश्चंस फ्रॉम
Yes, so
पुरुषोत्तम।
exactly. So when I was reading it carefully, it mentioned several times, at least three times, that the demigods performed the mental worship.
Yes.
So as far as I understood, Purusha Shukta explains Sarga, the primary creation. So my question is whether anything was manifested from that worship on the physical level, because it very differs from the creation by Brahma. Although it is mentioned that they created, you know, humans and birds and all kind of creatures.
Yes. So the whole point is in the primary creation, the blueprint for everything is created. Whatever there's going to be in the secondary creation that's manifest within the universe has already been created in its principle and its potency so that it can actually function in the primary creation. So in other words, that's why Brahma is said to be the engineer. He just follows the blueprint. So it's not actually that Brahma is creating. He's the creator in that he does things, but it's just like the engineer, you know, and the others just manifest what's already been designed before by the architect, right? So those primordial demigods, those are the eternal associates of the Lord, because we see is that you have these three features. You know, I think Prabhupada's talking about this. I just got sent this quote. Very nice. 1 second. Then in the journey of self-discovery in chapter one, then Prabhupada says, an individual soul is understood in three aspects. First, as the consciousness pervading the entire body, then as the spirit soul within the heart, and ultimately as a person. Similarly, the absolute truth is first realized as impersonal Brahman, then as localized Paramatma, then as localized supersoul Paramatma, and at the end as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna is all-inclusive. Or, in other words, Krishna is simultaneously Brahman, Paramatma, and the Personality of Godhead, just as every one of us is simultaneously consciousness, soul, and person. Journey of Self-Discovery, Chapter 1. Right, so we see here is that these three features is that it depends upon what you're discussing. So generally when we're discussing the primary creation, we're discussing as the super soul of the Mahatattva, right? The whole material energy. But then we see is that when Arjuna and Krishna go to visit him because he stole the sons of the Brahmin so that they would come and visit him. Then when he came to visit, then they see his palace and he comes out on the steps, all the associates, Lakshmi's there. There's a whole festival going on. Everything's happening. So the picture where we see it's just him laying down on the causal ocean and breathing in and out, that will be the Paramatma feature. And that all that energy and all that is there, that there is the pradhan, there is the causal ocean, there is, you know, the clouds that cover, you know, all these different things. And then each universe and all that, that'll all be his Brahman feature. Right? You know, just like us, we pervade the body through our consciousness, but it's just the consciousness aspect. But then we're situated in the heart as the soul, you know, and then the soul has its nature, what it is. You know, it's eternal, it's brighter than the sun. You know, it's made of Satchitananda and everything. Then there's us as the personality who has an interest in serving Krishna or not, and in serving Krishna, how we want to serve Krishna, or if we're not, then how we want to not serve Krishna. So these three features go on simultaneously. They're not separate from each other. So the main is the personality. Personality happens to be situated in the heart, and their consciousness spreads throughout the body. So in the same way as Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person himself. He, as super soul, then controls the spiritual and material world. And then as Brahman, he expands as all everything that you see that is manifest. Does that make sense? So therefore, those demigods, those are his eternal associates, that they're always there with him. And so then, if this is happening in the primary creation, then it's everything that will be manifest by Brahma, because without Brahma, I mean, without all this, Brahma can't do anything, because he can't provide ingredients, right? Brahma, as an engineer, can only follow the design and use whatever ingredients he's given. That's how the engineers and those who do the construction work. That's why Brahma and Shiva can't maintain the universe, because they don't provide the ingredients. Krishna provides the ingredients. So the living entities, the whole, you know, pradhan, the mahat, you know, the whole mahatattva elements, all these different features, that's all provided by Krishna. That's why Krishna only can maintain. The other demigods can't maintain. They can work with what's already there and work with it, but according to the laws that Krishna's already established. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Now I'm clear. So it was created in a subtle form, and then Brahma manifested it in the gross form. So those are, yeah, now I got
it. Yeah, but this subtle isn't mind, intelligence, and ego. This subtle is actually on that platform with Krishna and his energies transforming. So that's why it's before it's part of creation, but it's before the manifestation of where the living entities are an illusion. Because even the living entities at this point in time, as we see, they're all on the platform of Vasudev Sattva.
Right.
Right. Because they've been residing within the Lord. Then they come out. Right. When he glances and all that. But then after all these things are arranged, then according to what is their particular attraction or that sutra aspect, what it is that attracts them to, you know, to manifest their nature of Satchitananda, or, you know, of knowledge of existence and of happiness, and which form do they want? And according to that 8,400,000, and those situations within the 14 planetary systems, you know, according to the laws, original laws of nature and the original laws of spiritual life, then they're placed. That's where then Shiva then puts them into wherever they go in whichever universe. Right? So this has all happened. Unless this is there, Shiva can't put anyone anywhere. Maya has nothing to manage. Brahma can't then manifest the living entities, right? So in other words, no one can work until Krishna's done this. And we even see is that even he's glanced, and the material energy, which the material energy would expand from him, you know, all the 24 elements, the demigods can still do nothing with it until Krishna enters it, you know, into every atom of Vyakta. Then only they can then, under Krishna's direction, you know, through this sacrifice, then put together all the different situations and life forms and actions and their results and their experiences. So that's the whole thing. It's still all dependent on Krishna at every moment. But it's pastimes that they do these things to please the Lord, to interact with the Lord. So this is their nature. Since the Lord has this nature to be Paramatma, then he is Paramatma, has his associates who interact with him, you know, in that capacity. But they're interacting with him as Bhagavan. They're persons, he's person. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, thank you. It's perfect.
Okay. Yes, yes, please.
So these prayers, Brahma is offering to Garbhodaksha Vishnu, right? Because
which
the Purusha Sukta.
Yes, he does offer them, but it's not that he is the one that starts it. Because the Veda is manifest before Brahma's manifest. But when he does go to the Kiradak ocean to talk with Kiradakshai Vishnu, then it's the Purusha Sukta prayers that are offered, yes.
Okay.
Because so that's what he does.
Then originally, when in the Purusha Sukta prayers, then it is referring to Karanadakshai Vishnu, that means. Because if it is before Krishna.
Yeah, okay. I would say it's, but the same thing is, because it's the same principle that's going on, you can apply it to Garbhodakshai Vishnu and that, because the principle of that's all going to happen is already arranged. Then he does it. You know, it's just like you make a plan. I'm going to cook this, and this will go with this, and we'll fry this, we'll do this, we'll boil this, steam this, we'll grind this. We already worked it out, then you do it. But without working it out, how do you do it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you see there's those people that try to be that spontaneous, going to the kitchen, and, yeah, what do we do? Oh, we had this, and we could do that. But they're still thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying they're being spontaneous, but they're still planning ahead of time. They say, oh, we don't plan, we just at the time do. But they still have to think, okay, I have this, I could do this or that. You know, so there always has to be that concept before. That's why you see is that the situation and that sambandha gyan has to be there first before you can manifest something. That sambandha gyan of who I am, what the situation is, who I am, what are the relationship between the elements in that field, how do I relate to those, what could I do according to my abilities, and therefore with that endeavor, what result and experience could be gained. So,
yes, ma'am.
Yes. So it's this would be, I would say this is because the primary creation is Krishna's, and so this is all what he's doing with his associates.
Mm-hmm.
But the same exact principle applies then, because he's done that in the Mahatattva. Mm-hmm. Then each universe is going to be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, ma'am.
Like that. So, yes, so this would be part of when we see that Vidura is asking Maitreya about to explain the creation, but in the context of how everything's connected to Krishna, then we can see the Purusha Sukta would explain so many aspects of that. Because otherwise, then you see is when Kapila Muni is explaining it, or in the second canto when it's being explained, it's just showing the mechanics. It shows Krishna starting it off, but it's just showing the chain reaction after that. But it's not showing how he is doing all these things, how he's involved at each step, because without him, it actually can't function.
Mm.
Right? So for those who still want to think that I'm the controller and enjoyer, then there has to be, Krishna has to be hidden. Right? Mm. You know, it's just like those, what do you call it? There's that in grammar, I think in Jiva Goswami, there's something about, I think it's one of the ends, it might be the end with the squiggle on it. And then, or it's the you know, with the haladar or something, the where it's silent. And that there's some aspect where the sound, it's silent, but it has an effect because it's mm-hmm. there. Then it affects the grammar, but it doesn't make any sound, right? And so that way things are going on, but you don't see the Lord. So then in that way, he is, even though he's doing everything, he takes pleasure in not being seen that he's doing it. Because then when the living entity learns that he's doing these things, then they become conscious of him and then interact with him. That's what gives them happiness. But that they have found him, they've looked for him, they've actually made that endeavor. Because it's all about the Abhideya. Abhideya is the central feature. It means for us, the Sambandha Gyan is important to start the thing. And the goal is important because, yes, you're developing love for Krishna, but the whole point is in that position of love of Krishna, you're going to want to express that. So in a situation arranged by Yoga Maya, you are going to try to please Krishna out of it with your love through an endeavor. So Abhideya is always the central feature. It holds together what is possible and what you could get. It means, you know, what is there and what you can gain from that. So what holds those two together is the Abhideya in the middle. So the Sambandha and the Prayojana, these are concepts. And then the Abhideya becomes the actual how you can apply that. So, I mean, of course, you can look at all of it as theoretical. But when you apply it, that's when you see the manifestation of all these and the experience of all these.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's very far out how, you know, just like you gave that quote there. And so then that quotation of Srila Prabhupada, that you have these three features of the soul, where does that come from? That comes from Krishna. So he is unlimited and we are limited. So we can apply this within our body and Krishna applies this within the cosmos. And being that he is, he's also then within everything, that he is who gives that existence and that consciousness and that, you know, all that elements to the jiva themselves. Yes? No? Any good?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, so therefore this reflection of these two, and it's always what's in the macro and the micro, it's not a problem. This whole thing is, oh, it's Kali Yuga, everything's different, we can't follow all the Vedic. That's just uninformed, because the point is Krishna is still the potency that makes the Kali Yuga work. They still have to follow the laws of nature to accomplish anything, and the modes of nature will have their effect upon them according to the laws. And the system to get out is the same as in the other ages, in that you have this understanding and follow the process of the age, and you will get out. You will learn about the Supreme Lord, and you will move forward towards the Supreme Lord and develop a relationship. So all these things, it's always the same thing. It's not that, oh, it's a different situation, so everything's changed. No, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Just here, it's all temporary and doesn't has nothing to offer the living entity. It would be just like, let's say, I make a apple out of, you know, some synthetic material, you know, let's say, or something, you know, that's not an apple. I make it, let's say, out of paper mache, or I make it out of porcelain, or I make it out of plastic, you know, or something like that. So it's not an apple and you can't eat it and get any benefit from it. But the rules that apply to what make an apple in the way of its shape and color and all those different aspects and size, that has to remain. Right? So then if it's the right size of an apple, you say it looks like an apple, I make it 10 times bigger. You can say it's an apple, but it's not, but Prabhupada mentions that's actually impersonal because that's not the size of an apple. You know, so it's not actually the Vaishnava tradition to make deities of personalities bigger than what they are. You know, that's why Radha Madhava are Krishna, Radha and Krishna's actual size, you know, for this age. But Lord Chaitanya's actual size, like that. So that's what works, is that the actual size, we make it bigger, it's not actually, because that's not what they are. Now, someone like, let's see, Hanuman, you can make a huge deity Hanuman because he does have those forms where he takes those big things. Does that make sense? You know, so that you can do. You know, Garuda making him huge, you can do that also. You know, or universal form. Yeah, it means whatever it is, because that's what they are. Okay, we're good?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Anything else to add to that? Or no? No? Okay, Jagadish Prabhu, your questions are. There were any other questions, or that was.
No, Maharaj, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So then we'll move on. with preliminary procedures here. Now, next chanting, you know, in Mangalacharan is Narayan Upanishad. So in other words, he's going through all these verses that you see dynamically and very clearly establish, you know, Krishna's position, who Krishna is, you know, how you're going to understand that, how you're going to get there, what you're going to do, how attractive is Krishna, you know, the Sambandha Abhide Prayojana. You know, like in the beginning, that Yam Brahma Vedanta Vido Vadanti. Then, you know, this is who he is and how, means how he is the total of everything. Everything comes from him. Then, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam, then how the great sages, how they see, and like that they can give you, that's the Abhideya. And then what? Then Krishna Vai Satchitananda, how he's so beautiful and attractive and everything. He is beyond everyone else and everything like that. Then you see, so it does those three. Then we see in the Purusha Shukta, you're doing the same thing again. But getting into fine points of creation and all that. You know, so the other is how he's everything, you're going to attain that through the devotees and then he who you're attaining. Now Narayan Upanishad that goes on and also describes more aspects. Verse 1. Then the Supreme Lord Narayana desired to create living entities. From Narayana came the life heirs. From Narayana came the mind and all the senses. From Narayana came the elements, ether, air, light, water, and earth, which supports the universe. From Narayana came Brahma, Rudra, Indra, Prajapati. From Narayana came the 12 Adityas, the 12 Rudras, the 12 Vasus, all the Vedic meters, and all the Devas. Everything came from Narayana in the beginning, and everything enters into Narayana at the end. So he established his position, how he is everything. There is nothing that's not him, and he's the source of everything. And they all come from him, but they all go back into him. So it's not that they're created, now it's something else, and it goes off and does whatever it is, and he can't do anything about it. As some try to explain why there's bad in the world. So to avoid blaming God for the bad, then they say he doesn't have anything to do with it. But what they don't clearly look at is, no, because I do wrong, therefore there's bad. You know, because they're looking at, oh, I'm a religious person, why is bad happening to me? But the point is if we understand the point of transmigration, is that maybe you don't see you're doing bad now, but in the past you've done bad. And at the same time as, yeah, like that. So because the natural things, if something's wrong with me, it immediately blames authority. You know, that's how it works. So so this is then establishing, no, it all is him. Because only when you understand it's all him, then you have to follow the laws according to God, not just, okay, God's laws are there. How can I make adjustments in those? As we saw before, it's in the Abrahamic, and that then you had the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So I think the Sadducees were the older group. I'm not sure. Whichever was the older group, they just followed whatever laws were there, and that was it. They were like smartest. But because it's too rigid, because they don't understand how you a time, place, and circumstance apply it, and how it's about the personal relationship with God, and trying to see that aspect of being more personal, they emphasize more themselves as personal, and then make it kind of comfortable for them. And so that's what you see going on today. Even though people following what's there is very strict by today's standards, if you go back a few thousand years, then they would be considered more liberal, right? So they do still focus around themselves. So that they're looking at the vyasti aspect about themselves and how to apply, that's fine. But they may leave out the samasti as what's actually the laws and all that. So not appreciating that, then this point, then these things, it takes up speculation. Because if you don't accept religion, you'll get speculation, because they don't either know or accept the aspects of religion of the Lord himself being fully the Lord. Yeah, the Lord himself. Yeah, I lost it.
Chaitanya Mishai.
Oh, that's K.C. Das's Chaitanya Mishai.
Yes.
Oh, and is that, and it looks like Radha Govinda. Well, it's just, no, it's just Krishna with the cow. And is that Udupi? Okay. So then, where were we? Yeah, because they're not seeing the greater, then they're not seeing how their position has to be in line with what's the overall. It means the universal has is there. It has the laws of nature. Then we have to apply that into our situation. It'll be like a small model of the big, right? So that's what's perfect about Vedic system is it works on the universal. It works on the individual. It works on the communal. You know, it works on all these levels because it's just the same thing, either shrunk or expanded to its full form. Okay. Verse 2. Thus, Narayana is the eternal being. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, time, the directions, the subdirections, up and down, inside and outside, are all pervaded by Narayana. Narayana is everything, past, present, and future. Narayana is the eternal, pure, effulgent Lord, without a second to compare. He is Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, says the Upanishad. Right? So, so this feature we see is that he's everything, and that even the subtleties, inside, outside, up, down, the direction, everything, there's nothing that's there, and there's no one who's comparable to him. Right? So anyone who accepts that supremacy of the Supreme Lord, that's the Vaishnava position. How far they're taking it, that's another thing. So in the Vedas, we see that the Vedas are discussing Achintya-Bheda-Veda-Tattva because that is the supreme philosophy. Now, for different positions, for those individuals in their situation to be able to come closer to Krishna, then, depending on the time and the mentality, then features of Achintya-Bheda-Veda-Tattva are given to the living entities. Like we see the first one, then is given by Shankaracharya of the Advaita because they're coming in from Buddhism, right? Excuse me. So, oneness is a feature of the Lord because he is everything's pervaded everything. So, basically, you say you're starting from that. So the first point that's being made that Krishna is pointing out whenever he has a discussion is this point about how he is everything. He pervades everything. Right? So then if you're starting off people in spiritual life, that's the first thing they do. Now, we can say he's that, and we immediately see within a few sentences, we already bring it up to the point. Right? Or you make the point, then we go back and collect these things and then bring them through with that. But we see is that for you're dealing with the karmi mentality or just on the platform of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, then you're talking about very slowly moving. You know, we're talking about thousands of years, you know, with the Buddhists, and then, you know, then there's going to be, you know, so much time with the Mayavad and like this. And then gradually, then you're going to get up the Vishuddha-dvaita. No, Vishishtadvaita. You know, excuse me, actually before that, Vishuddhadvaita and Dvaitadvaita had already been introduced before. It's that features of there's one and difference or there's a purified oneness. Right? There's one, there's two, you know, but not the same. You can look at it both these aspects, then the purified aspect of that oneness. So it brings that farther together like that. And then you have bringing people in from Buddhism. Like that, and then the Vishishta Dwait, then Dwait, because people aren't quite catching the thing, they're getting too attached to the oneness. And so then it's being brought to that point where then they can appreciate now Achintya-Bheda-Veda Tattva can be taught. But the philosophical basis of the Veda, what it's discussing always is Achintya-Bheda-Veda Tattva. That's why for us, we don't have so much of a difficulty with Vedic. Because it is just discussing Achintya-Bheda-Veda-Tattva. So if you look at it that way, it means you understand it in that way, then all these different things, no matter what it is, they work in very nicely for us. That's why you see in Vrindavan, you have all those Vedic Brahmins and everything like that. It fits in quite well, no problem. Three, verse three. One should place Om first. Let's see, where is it? Okay, Amit Yagdev Yahavet. One should place Om first, Namah second, and Narayanaya at the end. Om is one syllable, Namah is two syllables, and Narayanaya is five syllables. Together they make the eight-syllable Narayana mantra. One who knows this eight-syllable Narayana mantra with purity in his heart attains all life, offspring, wealth, health, and cows, and finally attains immortality. One who knows the Narayana mantra and Narayana attains immortality, says the Upanishad. But so this element of means, because Krishna is everything and everything's connected with him, if you connect what you're doing with Krishna, then what you're here in the material world, what you require for doing your activities here is arranged. Just like in the spiritual world, if you're doing everything for Krishna, then whatever you're doing, all the arrangements for that are there. You have your place to stay, you have your service, you have your associates, you have your paraphernalia, all that's already there, that's already been arranged by the Yoga Maya. So the point is that's why it says with purity in his heart, means the purity is he's trying to attain to Krishna consciousness. It maybe takes some time, but the point is that's his determination. That's what he's doing. So then naturally, then everything works very, very nicely. So now it says here that one finally attains immortality. So this immortality, because we could see, is that generally it'll be taken as moksha. So that would be the spiritual understanding of it, that it's moksha, is that you're beyond the mode, you're beyond the material energy. At least that's the thing. You're situated on the spiritual platform. So when they say beyond the material nature, they mean beyond and situated in the spiritual. And that's the immortality. That's why you would focus on that. You don't die. You're not in the cycle of birth and death. But what's not brought up or not thought about there is by generally the general philosopher or the impersonalist, is that the actual immortality, who's immortal, right? Because immortal means you, the living entity, are immortal. And that doesn't mean you become part, because if everything's Brahman, you're already part of the immortal. So how is it that you're not immortal now, even though the soul is, but their consciousness? So it doesn't mean that there has to be a removal of the individual living entity. This is foolishness. It's that they remain as the individual, but now they actually develop a relationship with the Lord. Because if you're having if you get liberation without a relationship with the Lord, you will come back. That's the whole point. So that we can't actually say that's immortality. Just because you're out of the material world for some time, and when you're out, because you're sitting in eternal time, it seems like a long time. But at the same time, is how long does it take before you to get bored, right? You come into some place, sit down in a situation, it's a nice situation, comfortable situation. How long before you get bored of that sitting there? You've been outside, it's hot, you come inside, or you're really tired, you sit like that. You sit for a little bit of time and you enjoy that, that being freed, or that immortality of being freed from that uncomfortable situation. But then after a while, you get bored. So then, because you don't have a relationship with the Lord, you will be back. So you can't call that, Madhvacharya explains, you can't call that immortality. Right? It means in a colloquial sense, or there's a term for it, what means, how the general people call it. Like that. There's a name for it when you call it according to how people use it and things like that, that kind of. Whew. That's interesting.
In lay terms?
Lay terms, yeah, but there's a name for it that they use when they mean that it's about the way people think, like that. Oh well, whatever. So so if you go back far, no, stay here. I wonder why we went blurred there for a moment. We were discussing Brahman, and so we started to go into Brahman. So, yeah.
What happens when you bring your hand in front? It focuses on your hand and the rest of the body.
Oh, and then
No, in
you go
front of the
blurred.
face.
Oh, and then that becomes the thing, and then you become blurred, so you have to come forward to it. Oh, okay. So that means that the those Hasidic guys at the wall, that they're always doing the davanas, that's so they keep their face from going blurred, so they always keep moving forward. No? Okay. Okay, so actual immortality is when you connect yourself with a relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's how Madhvacharya explains, liberation or immortality. That's actual immortality. Anything short of that's not immortality. So, it's a temporary form, that please you for a moment, but at the same time, it's just not what you want, what you're actually looking for. So whenever it actually says immortality, it actually means attaining an eternal relationship with the Lord. It means, in other words, you have purity in the heart, so everything that you have, your life, offspring, wealth, health, and cows, you're going to use it in the Lord's service, in connection with the Lord. They're going to finally attain immortality. They're actually going to come to the position of pure devotional service. But for those who aren't on that platform yet, they can see it as liberation, or they can see it as going to the heavenly planets. Right? And so for the karmis and the jnanis, they can also see it using the same word. They take it because that's their goal. But the actual immortality only has real meaning when it's in relationship to being in a relationship, eternal relationship with the Lord in one spiritual form. Right? So that's going to be there. So that's it. So if you know, it says knows the mantra and Narayana. Because if you just know the mantra, yes, you'll get so much benefit, but you're not going to attain immortality unless you know Narayana, the person who you're dealing with. So if you only know him on the platform of all-pervading or only on the super soul, it's not going to be quite as far enough. So when you come to the point of Bhagavan, then that you attain immortality. All right? Good. Four, the syllable Om is directly the Supreme Lord, full of bliss, composed of three sounds, A, U, and M. The pranava becomes Om, right? So he's full of a bliss, so he's the three sounds, A, U, and M, they combine together to be Om, right? So then, we have heard that, A is Krishna, U is the internal potency, M is the living entity, right? So this way, then there's always the Lord and his internal potencies and the living entity. This is always what you have. So in the spiritual world, that's what's going on. In the material world, that's what's going on. So the living entities assist. So M is assisting you in serving A. Right? Does that make sense? Right? And then you have the Chandra Bindu. Then that will be the Dham. And then the Dham will be the pastimes. The Chandra will be the Dham that I know of, and the Bindu will be the pastimes, unless it's the other way. But whatever, it's described. One of the Acharyas describes that. So in that way, then you get complete. The Lord is internal potency with the living entities in the spiritual realm, then perform pastimes of, loving devotion. The yogi who utters the pranava many times becomes freed from the bondage of repeated birth, right? So you see is that this aspect is that the Brahman feature, you'll become free from that association with the material energy. One who worships the Lord with this mantra will certainly go to the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, right? So the Om will free you from the material world, and the Nama and Narayanaya, that's going to get you into the spiritual realm. But at the same time, is Om is still, even though it's in that impersonal form, it's still Radha, Krishna, and the living entities performing their pastimes. Even though it's Brahman. But it's still them. There isn't something else. Not Brahman is a separate entity. Okay. One who worships the Lord with this mantra will certainly go to the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, which is a lotus full of consciousness, shining effulgently. The transcendental Lord is known as the son of Devaki. Right? So now it's starting to talk about the transcendental Lord. You mentioned before immortality, which will be getting beyond here, being situated on the spiritual platform. You're freed from the material energy, so you're situated on the spiritual platform. But actual immortality means transcendental. So when Prabhupada talks about spiritual and transcendental, spiritual is the platform of existence, and transcendental is that interaction in loving relationship with the Lord. The transcendental Lord is known as the son of Devaki, as Madhusudana, as Pundarikaksha, as Vishnu and Achyuta. The one Narayana is situated in all living entities. He is the cause of all causes, the Supreme Brahman. So I bring it back to the situation. So that person, that's the one who's situated in all living entities. He's the super soul. So we discussed how everything's from him, but he's also the one in the heart that everything goes on. 5. One who recites the mantra in the morning destroys the sins of the night. One who recites the mantra in the evening destroys the sins of the day. One who recites the mantra at noontime facing the sun is freed from all types of sins. That person attains the fruits of studying all the Vedas. He attains the world of Narayana. Yeah, so it means you're chanting this Om Namo Narayanaya or whatever is your mantra. You're giving that 3 times a day, morning, noon, and evening. And so then this then takes care of when it's completely freed from all contamination. There's not another. That's why for the Vaishnavas, prayaschitta means absorbed in chanting the holy name in the association of Vaishnavas. Right? That's what purifies. Being engaging your nature in the Lord's service and all that is the secondary aspect, and that is how you're going to purify everything. So that's it. Gain all knowledge by this and all purity by this. Like that. And so naturally, the devotee learns about the Lord not because of jnana. He wants to have so much knowledge so he can give a fabulous class and that and impress everybody. You know, he's interested in Krishna. When he's Krishna, you want to know about Krishna. So therefore, then you happily read about Krishna and hear about Krishna, contemplate Krishna. And this way, you know. So the point is the fruits of studying all the Vedas that one would gain from that on the material platform from doing that, you get this by chanting the mantra. Also, Manu mentions this, that the most important thing for a brahmana is chanting his japa. Right? So in other words, chanting the holy name, that's the most important thing that the brahmana can do. And so since the perfection of human life is to act on the capacity of basics of Brahman and that maturing into that of the Vaishnava platform, that means then chanting the holy name is the most important thing for everybody. Right? So here is that therefore the scholars, whatever it is that they're doing, all their prayaschitta and doing all their purificatory rites, all the smartas, all those things are taken care of by chanting the holy name. And that person then attains the world of Narayana. So the world of Narayana doesn't mean just the Brahman platform, means where Krishna is performing his pastime. Yeah? Good? Yes? No?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
Then the next mantra, then that Swastino Govindaha Swastino Achyuta Nantau. This is, may Lord Govinda, Achyuta, Ananta Sesh, Vasudev, and Lord Vishnu bestow auspiciousness upon us. May Vishvakshena, the Lord of the universe, Hrishikesha, and Lord Hari bestow auspiciousness upon us. May Garuda, the son of Anjana, or may Garuda and the son of Anjana, who is the great devotee of Lord Rama, Hanuman, bestow auspiciousness upon us. May the great and only Lord of auspiciousness, Sri Krishna, who is like a transcendental cloud full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and who is the Lord of all the demigods, bestow upon us all prosperity and auspiciousness. Krishna Upanishad. So he sees that the Lord manifestation of the Lord and then his devotees by their grace, then all whatever we're looking for is coming from that. There's no need of looking elsewhere for it, right? Means in the performance of our duties, whatever is to be done is done. But what results we get, then that's all dependent upon the Lord being pleased and the mercy of the devotees. And then we see it all works out very nicely. So that they give all auspiciousness, and that then we may be absorbed in the Krishna, and then that's nice. So that's the point. If you want all benediction, this is where you get it. Yes? Then the next one, Karotu swasti me Krishna sarva lokeshvara eshvaraha karshnadayascha kuruvantu swasti me lokapavanaha. May Krishna, the Lord of all lords of the universe, and his followers, the deliverers of the fallen, bestow auspiciousness upon me. Sanmohana Tantra. So here it brings out again about the point of the followers of the Lord, because they're the deliverers of the fallen. So then this now brings it down to, you know, our position. Then Krishna mamaiva sarvatra swasti kuryat sriya samam tataiva cha sada karshnihi sarva vigna vinashanaha. May Krishna, the destroyer of all obstacles, and his followers bestow auspiciousness and prosperity to me at all times and places. Vishnu Yamala Samhita. Right, so we also see here is that this is why for us we don't need to worship Ganesh, because all auspiciousness is being given by Krishna and the devotees, and all obstacles are being destroyed by Krishna and the devotees. So there's no need to worship Ganesh. I mean, we respect Ganesh because he's serving the Lord. He's a devotee and that, and he's serving like this. But worshiping him in the capacity as Ganesh, that's the only way you can gain rid of inauspiciousness. Yes, for the non-devotees, that's true. Because Krishna is the one who destroys all inauspiciousness and who gives all auspiciousness. But because the materialist isn't willing to accept that position of the Lord or that devotion towards the Lord, then at least they're respecting his potencies and his authority in the form of Ganesh. Right? So then that becomes the principle for them. But for us, then we're just worshiping the Lord because it's already taken care of. Atasi Kushumo Pameya Kantir Yamuna Kula Kadamba Mula Varti Navagopa Vadhu Vilasali Vitanotu No Mangalani Devaha. May Krishna, who has the complexion like the Atasi flower, who is situated under the Kadamba tree on the bank of the Jamuna River, who is skillful at pastimes with the wives of the cowherds of Vrindavan, bestow auspiciousness upon us. That's from Vishnu Rahasya. Krishna Karotu Kalyanam Kamsa Punjara Keshari Kalandi Jalakalola Kolahala Kutu Halaha. May Krishna, who sports with great noise in the waves of the Jamuna River, and who, like a lion, killed the elephant Kamsa, bestow auspiciousness upon me. Naradiya Purana. Right, so we see is that the elephant, you know, he sports in the water. You know, that's what they like to do, and they make a great scene while they're there. You know, it's great fun. So that he killed, you know, then mean Krishna, then he is the actual, because that's about him, the transcendental. We see here is that Krishna is like the lion. He's killing the elephant material on the material platform, elephant Kamsa. So we see is that the material desires are also compared to the elephant. And so then when you're dealing on the material platform, then the elephant is the material desires. and that. So Kamsa is like that. He's the big demon. And then Krishna, like the lion, because the lions kill the elephant. And you see within his own pastimes, then he sports in the water and all that, because it's transcendental, because it's now it's about his desire. The pastimes means it's centered around Krishna's desire. You know, but when you see is that on the material platform, it's centering around our desires. So that mentality that I'm the controller and enjoyer, that must be removed. So that is destroyed by Krishna. So by his grace, then bestow all auspiciousness means I can give up all material desire and just see how it's fulfilling Krishna's desire. Madhavo, Madhavo Vachi, Madhavo, Madhavo Huridi. Smaranti sadhavas sadhave sarva karyeshu madhavam. The devotees always remember the Lord. The name Madhava is constantly on their tongues and constantly in their minds and permeates all their activities. Narasimha Purana. Because everything they're doing, then it's all about Krishna. So Krishna's always pervading everything. Their mind, whatever they're seeing, whatever they're doing, whatever they're interested in, all these things are all connected with Krishna. So then the Lord is always within their mind, always, yeah, on their lips. Labhas te sham. So we see as before, we're getting rid of all obstacles, establishing auspiciousness, but that actual auspiciousness means then coming to the platform of being absorbed in the Lord always. Labhas te sham, jayas te sham, kutas te sham, para avam. Yesham indivara shyamo hridayasto janardanaha. For those who have Janardana, whose complexion is that of a blue lotus within hearts, there is all gaitery and no defeat in any enterprise. Pandava Gita. Right. So this is the only way of everything going. And in no defeat in any enterprise. We see before, because everything's connected to the Lord, that service, that being able to absorb yourself from the Lord and all that, that mood of service, that can never be defeated. Right? That's that. The external form of what you're doing may manifest in a nice way or not, or may take some time to manifest. That's according to, you know, the Lord's arrangement. But the ability to be always fixed in the Lord and always undefeated in being absorbed in the Lord, like we see Prahlad Maharaj, no matter what happens with the Pandavas, that's then the position that the devotee looks for. Then you have all these wonderful pastimes. Mangalam Bhagavan Vishnur Mangalam Madhusudanaha Mangalo Yam Hrishikesho Mangalayan Mangalayatano Harihi Vishnu Charana Matrena Krishnasya Smaranad Tarehi Sarva Vignani Nasyanti Mangalam Syanna Samshayaha. The Supreme Lord Vishnu is all auspicious. Madhusudana is all auspicious. Hrishikesha is all auspicious. Hari is the abode of all auspiciousness. Simply by saying the name of Vishnu or by remembering Krishna, all obstacles are destroyed and all auspiciousness comes. This is certain. Brihad Vishnu Purana. Right? So it's also bringing out this point is that you have these things. We may have these interesting areas. We're connecting everything to Krishna. But one should have that faith. This is certain. Means it's not that in some situations it is, in others it's not. Like some, oh, only if it's a pure chanting, then you'll get, you know, the benefit. No. Holy name always gives you the benefit. Pure chanting will give you prema. You know, namabhas will give you liberation. Right? So for the materialistic mind, that doesn't make sense, because for them, liberation is the biggest thing you can get. So how can being inattentive while chanting and that give you that? No, it has to be, you know, and strict rules and how you're sitting and how you're doing and this and that. Then only, no, there's no rules for this. There's nothing controlling the holy name. The holy name is not controlled by our rules and our bath and our three times a day sandhya and all. No, it's only controlled by Krishna. And so Krishna is controlled by devotion. So if you're dealing with him and chanting his name, it is Krishna. So at least on the Brahman platform, everything is then situated in auspiciousness. You're seeing it that, yes, he's the Supreme Lord controlling all his energies. And then you'll have that aspect. Then your activities and all that technically start to work. And then as you see his Bhagavan, then it starts to bring you to him that as in devotion, that you want to have a relationship with him. So this being certain is important. This being certain and fixed, this is the symptom of the Mandyama platform. That yes, there isn't anything else. Satyam Kaliyuge Vipra Shri Harir Harer Nama Mangalam Param Swastyayanam Nrinam Nastyeva Gatir Anyata. O Brahmana, chanting of the holy name is the auspicious process in Kali Yuga. It is the highest auspiciousness for mankind. There's no other way. So saying that as Kali connected with him, he's the one giving and all that. Okay, yes, so what technique can I get? And then it's saying about, you know, chanting his name, remembering him. You get, okay, like that. But what, you know, what is that situation in which I do all that? Then it's coming to the point is, no, it's the holy name himself is the highest. Is no other way. In other words, you're chanting the holy name. Other rituals can be added to that. Other certain nice auspicious situations can be added, but it's the holy name that makes it auspicious. That's the actual thing. Because it's about Krishna, it's Bhagavan. That's the actual point that makes it. So Brahman Paramatma, they're secondary to the principle of Bhagavan. So even we see here is when we're going to remembering Krishna and the holy name and that his holy name, then we see as it is and still is going through these three features of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Pundarikaksham Govindam Madhavadhims Chaya Smaret Tasyasyan Mangalam Sarva Karamadhau Vignanashanam. He who remembers all the forms of the Lord, such as Pundarikaksha, Govinda, and Madhava, will attain all auspiciousness and destruction of all obstacles in all activities. Vishnu Dharmokanam Krishnam Govindam Guru Garudadvajam Madhavam Pundarikaksham Vishnu Narayanam Harim Vasudevam Jagannatham Achutam Madhusudanam Tata Mukundanantadin Yasmaret Pratamam Shudhi Karta Sarvatra Sutaram Mangalananta Karmanaha. The intelligent man who first remembers the various forms of the Lord and his pastimes before performing his activities will attain infinite auspiciousness in all that he does. Rudra Yamala. So, in other words, now that he brought it up to that point, so therefore, always remembering him, that destroys all obstacles. So someone who, the intelligent person who does this first, before he starts his activities, he'll be successful.
Maharaj?
So then that, yes.
Can we chant these verses along with Swasti Vachana if we want to?
You could. But from what it says here is that we're going to start a program. I mean, specifically what it's for is that you're going to, let's say you're going to go do some program, let's say at the temple or this or that, or, you know, something for the temple. Then there's going to be a Mangalacharan, right? So it's showing it in the relationship with here. So that this would be chanted before you even start the whole thing.
Okay.
You're going to sit down together in the purified place and all that. You might have arranged that whole thing and then sat down, you know, so there's something arranged for you. But before you start, you chant all these mantras. Okay. Then you start, you know, putting together everything. That would be the main place it's used. But it could also be used even before, because you see, as the other mantras will come later.
Yes.
You know, so you could, if you want to do a bigger thing, then do the Swasti Vachana. After that, do this. Then go into whatever the mantras are for the particular ritual, you know, if people can sit around. But this is would break it up, because then this would be done earlier before you even start that.
Mm.
You know, in other words, all this will go together and then you do like that. But, you know, the point is this, it's chanting the Lord's names. It can be done anywhere in the preliminary. It means it can always be done within the preliminary procedures.
Okay, ma'am.
So, yeah, yes. So for the Yajnavalkyas, it's worthwhile teaching them these mantras that they're going to, you know, begin doing. Either they all sit down, they swept the area, they started, you know, they've done that and it's clean and that, they've got out the pot, maybe installed the pot. Then they sit and chant these mantras. Then after that, they set up and do the whole thing. Or you can, you know, do something, you know, chanting mantra, it means sprinkling the water and all that, set it all up. And when the yagshala is basically, you know, arranged, then chant all these mantras. And then, you know, then set everything up for the, you know, the actual performance of the place. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
You know, it's just like you see the Shris and they sit down and do the, what do you call it? Can't remember. But they sit down and they do it. For them, they make a huge thing out of this. And they do their thing with the pot, and putting the water in and out and doing all these different things. And Punya Havachana is called. And so for them, this is the biggest thing. Everyone comes together in that, if you're sitting around and kind of going along and chanting, maybe quietly to themselves and nothing's happening. But this they make a big thing out of. Because if you didn't, then you see it's not necessarily used. So it can be, you know, you can discuss with Chaitanya Roshai about, you know, how to work it in. But it's something that, how you say, then it is is done before doing all this. Like it sees next is Adivas, so before you're starting that. You can see it, so it's starting at the very beginning of the program. You know, so it's before the Adivas. So if you're going to do the Adivas and do that, you're doing a big program, then it's done before. You know, otherwise then it's done like in the morning, early morning, you do all these different things, and we'll see later, you worship all the different personalities and that. And then once that's all done, then at the auspicious time that's for that particular samskar, then you do that activity. So these are just how to, you know, make everything to expand it more so that whole day, you know, and that whole activity that you're doing becomes very nice. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
We up to now hadn't got as much into this and the other preliminary activities. Sometimes for very big programs we'll do. But because we were seeing enough problem just getting people to take part in the samskar itself, in the marriage or the samskar, without getting, you know, distracted and all that. You know, because in the beginning people thought, why are we doing all this? This is all this, you know, this and that. We just chant. And so, you know, it took, you know, starting in the, specifically in the 80s, I mean, 70s are doing something, but mainly from the 80s. You know, let's say mid-80s, then mid-80s to 90s to knots to here. So it's taken basically 30 years for it to kind of be accepted that it's okay. And so now we can nicely, you know, start introducing these things more and more. Now that it's okay to do these things, we can easily now add these things in. Does that make sense? Like in the yajna before, we just stuck with the pancharatra kind of elements. So we were doing the, you know, the Vedic mantras, but the pancharatric rituals. But once that got established and everybody understood, then we brought in all the Vedic things. Then we're doing that. It's established nicely. So now, you know, as it goes and people are willing to sit for these things, then we can add in all these others. Is that good?
Okay, Mark. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So then tomorrow, then we'll start with the Adivas. Vasudeva Archanam. Yeah, then we get. So there's quite a lot of preliminary. Interesting. The Vivaha Karma starts on page 108. Yeah, so we still have another 25 pages of, you know, preliminary activities. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai.